Hello and welcome back to Let's Grow Girls, your weekly dose of flowers.
So it's the last episode of the season, and my goodness, have we ever saved a treat for you this week. We have got Felicia with us of Menagerie Farm in the central coast of California. Welcome, Felicia. Thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Hi, it's great to be here. I'm excited to talk with you.
Yeah, we're so excited to talk to you as well. In case you don't know, I am a massive rose lover, and we've just got Sarah on the rose train. She's a little bit slow to the party, but I've dragged her here kicking and screaming. She bought her first rose this year, Boscobel, David Austin one, which I think was a great choice that I coached her into.
Coached, manhandled, forced.
Well, we had to get you there somehow. So, Felicia, you are an amazing rose farmer. We absolutely love following you on Instagram, but you are a bit of a different kind of flower farmer for us, in that a lot of the guests that we speak to have come to farming a bit later in life. But you're a farmer by blood, aren't you?
Yeah, my grandparents were farmers, and I grew up farming. I studied agriculture in college, so farming and agriculture has actually been my career. So I came to flowers a little later, farming them professionally and commercially. I farmed a lot of other crops, but I have been a farmer pretty much my whole life.
I was interested to read that it was French prunes that were a big thing on the farm. Is that right?
Yeah, I still farm French prunes as well. So I have about 72 acres of French prunes, which I still grow and farm. And those are dehydrated into what most people buy in the grocery store they know as prunes. And I also have some rice and walnuts and peaches and a number of other crops as well. I have a little over 100 acres.
Wow, 72 acres of prunes. I am impressed. That is a lot of prunes that you must be growing every year.
Yeah. And in my neck of the woods, I'm a small farm. Like 72 is not that many. where I live, the area of California I live in Northern California, is the largest prune growing region in the world. So we're kind of like the prune capital here. So most of the prunes that actually end up in England come from California. So that's a big market for us, actually.
And how much of that 100-ish acres have you got dedicated to flowers?
Flowers, I have about 3 acres in cut flowers, and then I have about another 2 acres that is a bare root production. So I grow them for the purpose of selling the plants. So about 5 acres total that's kind of cut flowers and plants.
So you've got the two kind of work streams for the farm, haven't you? You're actually selling the cut flowers, but you've got this whole huge bare root production.
Yeah, so I sell cut flowers in season, mostly roses. I do sell some flowering branches off of my prunes and other trees. I do some tulips in the spring, really, and that's just kind of so we have some flowers before the roses are ready for the season. And then I have the nursery as well. So the nursery is kind of the other part of the farm where I sell bare root plants as well as potted roses in season as well. And flower care products like fertilizers, spades.
Oh, cool. And you've just had is it an annual bare root sale that you do?
Yes. So it's really what it is it's, I would say, seasonal. We put our bare roots on sale usually around the end of January, and then we sell them through April. And we ship through April. So January through April is kind of our bare root season. And depending on how quickly they sell out, sometimes they sell out very quickly. I try to have stock through the whole season, but usually what ends up happening, because demand has gotten so high for roses, that we sell out pretty quickly, usually within a few weeks. But luckily this year, I did have more stock, and we do still have some in stock, which is what my goal was not to sell out all at once and to be able to have some stock available for people that maybe were a little more procrastinators, or, you know, couldn't buy in January, that are maybe just now thinking about their gardens, that they could actually find something available.
Well, we definitely saw the mad rush of people, you know, making their lists. I'm on your mailing list, even though I can't buy anything. And I was, you know, checking out what varieties you had. I was like, oh, I can't get that one here. But I saw so many people on my Instagram like, oh my God, the Menagerie rose bare root sales going on sale. Got to get those fingers ready before they sell out.
Yeah, it's madness. I mean, we plan For a bare root, it takes almost 3 years between like ordering the root stock, getting the root stock in the ground, growing out the root stock. So grafted roses take almost 3 years, and then own root roses are really a full year. So like I'm already actually this week, you know, one of the meetings I'm having tomorrow, which is why I've been so busy lately too. It's not just the book. I also do a lot of other things, but trying to schedule even the podcast was I'm planning for 2025 already. So I have to predict, you know, what's going to be popular colors and varieties. And, you know, that's what I'm already planning on to make sure that I can have all of the propagation stock and all of those things in place. You know, when things sell out so quickly, I wish I had more. It takes that long to grow out the stock. So, you know, I wish 2 years ago or 3 years ago, you know, I had grown more, but who knew, even with the pandemic, gardening was already having kind of a renaissance and a resurgence. But I think, you know, when 2020 hit, it went into overdrive with people buying plants. Like the demand is just so high. So I'm hoping by 2024, I won't sell out as quickly because I'm definitely planting more stock. So hopefully people won't have to get online so fast.
Fingers crossed. And I have to ask before we lose this tangent, what are your predictions for 2025? What are people going to want? What are you predicting?
I think people for their gardens are going to want to go back to brighter colors, like the yellows, bright oranges, peaches for gardening. I think for cut flowers, that's a little bit different because that kind of usually goes with the like wedding market trends. And I think for weddings, I think taupes are here to stay. Like people really like the taupes, the neutrals. I usually call them antique-y tones. So like for varieties like Coco Locos, Honey Dijons, toffee colored, those I think are going to continue to stay popular for weddings and events. But I think for gardens, I think people are really liking bright colors again.
Have you, continuing the tangent, have you seen the latest UK releases of the two new David Austin roses that they've released this year? I don't think they've come out in America this year, but I bet you've got your eyes on those two.
Yeah, you know, I think they're beautiful. I mean, I love the colors. You know, they're always, even we get them like basically a year later than you guys do, lucky you. But I think they're great colors. They're great picks. I think they are right in line with what people are interested in, and a lot of their new releases also just, especially the last few years, like Roald Dahl, Vanessa Bell, have had really great disease resistance and long base life for a garden rose if you're using it as a cut flower. So I think their breeding program is just, you know, second to none. And I think that, you know, they have really, really exceptional roses. And you guys get to have them over there earlier than we do, which is lucky.
I'm excited to add those two to my collection. And I'm not, you were saying about, you know, the trends maybe moving into yellows for gardeners. And like, that's my orange and yellow is going into an area I'm usually uncomfortable with. Although Sarah loves those bright colours. But that new one, that Bring Me Sunshine, I was like, that, I have to have it. It looks absolutely gorgeous. So I'm excited to try a new colour this year. So I think maybe your prediction's right. If I'm going to the bright side, then
it's possible for anyone.
I might be. I'm a bright person. I mean, I grow everything that obviously like sells. I mean, part of what I do is I grow what designers want for weddings and events, and they may not always be my personal favorite colors, but they're popular and in demand. But personally, in my own garden, I like yellows. I mean, anybody that talks to me knows that I like brighter colored roses in the landscape. They're my favorite. So I think that they are going to make a comeback. Like you said, if you're not really into brights and they're already winning you over, then maybe my prediction is right.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. 2024, we've noted that down, bright roses. So can you tell us a little bit more about kind of the climate that you're working in? Because I think you're probably, I mean, you've just said you're the like prune capital of the world. So I'm guessing it's quite a good climate for just growing anything in general. So the roses must like it where you are.
Yeah, so my climate, I live in, the farm is in the Sacramento Valley. So it is a warmer, arid kind of valley climate. We have pretty mild winters in that we don't usually get much below freezing. And if we do, it's, you know, maybe for an hour overnight, a handful of days in the winter. We have very high heat in the summer. It is that kind of, again, valley heat where we can get upwards of 100 degrees. But we do have more seasonality where we are here in the valley, kind of in the middle of the state, in that we don't don't have the coastal marine influence because we're not near the ocean and we're not as far inland or up into the foothills as like some of the mountain areas like Lake Tahoe. So we do have a really nice balance, I think, of seasonality, and that we do have seasons, whereas a lot of the coastal areas of California, you know, it's always beautiful and 70 degrees year round. I do have more of a winter season. So it is a great kind of more, you know, I've heard it called kind of more like the European, a Mediterranean type climate. Soils here are really great. I actually live at the base of a mountain range called the Sutter Buttes, and it is the smallest mountain range in the world. It's actually that's a trivia question for you. If you ever want to know the smallest mountain range in the world, it is the Sutter Buttes, and it is a dormant volcano. So a lot of the soils here, my soils are actually built on essentially a kind of nice, rich volcanic soil. So I do have really nice soil for growing here. Some of it's a little more clay than I'd like, certain portions of the farm. With the amount of acreage I have, I actually have about 5 different soil types, believe it or not, on all the acreage. But some of it's a little more clay than I would like. Oh, wow. But yes, overall, it's a really, this area of California is known for growing rice, walnuts, almonds, prunes, peaches, tomatoes for canning. And then a little bit farther, about 30 miles west, where I have some other farm property from where my main farm is, where the roses and the prunes are grown, there's a lot of seed crops grown there for vegetables and sunflower seeds for flour, for cut flowers. So that's a nice seed growing region as well. So really everywhere I am here within like a 60 mile radius grows some sort of food or fiber crop. So I am definitely in the agricultural area of California, or one of, I should say.
So we have to ask, prunes to roses, how did that happen? Where was the leap from one to the other?
So that was really just, I'll be honest, somewhat by happenstance. I had moved back to the farm. I had lived down in on the central coast of California for about 20 years, and I had worked in vineyards and wineries, and I was still managing our farm up here for my grandparents, and I would commute back and forth a couple times a month. But, you know, this was not my main area or my main farm. And I had moved up here. I had just had a baby. I was growing the prunes, and a friend of my husband's, who was a floral designer, came by to pick up something from him. And I was out in the front of our house where my grandmother had all these old garden roses that she had grown here for years. They'd been here for more than 50 years. Some had been here even prior to my grandparents buying the property. And he goes, "These are really beautiful. Like, can I buy some from you? They're super popular right now. You can get them at the San Francisco Flower Mart," which is, I'm sure you guys are familiar with San Francisco Flower Mart. It's like a big flower market in San Francisco for people to buy wholesale flowers. A lot of wedding and event florists go there. And I said, "No, I didn't realize." Like, I had always thought, you know, greenhouse grown roses were roses. And that's what I experienced in college down where I used to live. And I'd gone to college in California. There are large rose greenhouses, or there's tons of greenhouse grown roses. And I thought, I mean, in my head, that, well, that's what people buy. That's what florists buy. They buy these greenhouse grown roses. Like, how could I ever grow anything like that here? It's too hot. As I mentioned, we have over 100 degree summers. Like, you would never grow in a greenhouse here. It's just too hot. He kind of put the bug in my head, like, "Hey, what if I could grow these roses? Because garden roses grow really well here." So I started selling a few to him. And then he told some of his friends, and I sold a few more. And then at that point, I actually had to get more plants, because the ones that were existing on the property weren't enough to fill, you know, orders. And that just, it sort of took off from there. I planted like my first acre, and then another acre, and then another acre. And it just kind of spiraled from there. But that's how it started. It was really kind of organic, and just a conversation with someone that set me down that path.
And the next thing you know, you've got 3 acres of roses and a whole little bare root operation going on. I love it.
I know.
Always say on this show is that growing flowers is like a hobby that got out of hand.
That's totally true. It kind of is, because I'm always like, "Oh, but I, you know, I can," yeah, like I'm like, "Oh, I can squeeze one more in here, or one more." I'm always like trying to squeeze more. Yeah. And in fact, I actually just got some plant stock in, that's some test stock from a breeder to try. Like, it's not on the market yet. It's not in commerce. It's I trial for a lot of rose breeders. You know, I got a package today, and I was like, "Where are we going to fit these? Like, where are we?" Because I tried to trial them in the ground and not in pots, because I want to really see how they do, you know, in the soil. And Portland. And I was like, oh gosh, we already have our planting mats done. Like, where am I going to fit these guys? So I've got to like squeeze more ink. So there's always room for one more. I'm kind of the more the merrier. I'll squeeze it in somewhere.
Definitely our type of grower. That's forever our mantra. I can't seem to help myself. Like, I said to myself, I'm not going to buy any more roses this year. And then I bought 6 more because I found out that there's one here that's called Champagne Moment, but I think you call it Lion's Fairy Tale in America. And I heard it was like being discontinued. I was like, I cannot live without this rose. So I went and bought 3 of those. And then somebody told me that another rose that we call Navalis, and I think you call Poseidon, it's like a purpley lilac rose. I don't know if you've heard of that one. And then somebody told me that one was going to be discontinued. 3 more of those in the bag. And then David Austin rudely released 2 new ones. 2 more in the bag. I just can't help myself. I'm like an addict.
You've got a problem.
Yep, there's... There's always room for more. Well, and my mantra is too, is that, you know, I'll plant it. And then I'm like, okay, well, if I've got to move it, I'll just give it to a new home. Like, I'm like, oh, I'll just, you know, I'll have a friend that'll take it. Like, somebody else will, you know, take it off my hands. But, you know, I can't say no to them, and I will find them a home. Like, even if I can't fit it in, I will make sure that I can gift it to someone else.
I like that. Like a rescue shelter for roses. You take them in, you don't let them be euthanized, and you find them good homes.
Exactly.
So, let's talk specific
yes.
rose questions now.
Mm-hmm. We need to give the people what they want, and that is rose tips from the master. So, where would you start for someone who maybe, like me, isn't really a rose grower? What would be your top tips for someone who's new to roses?
So, you know, I say go with ones that are, like, if you're talking about, Nicole was just talking about things that were maybe discontinued or maybe older roses. Mm-hmm. For somebody who's a new grower, I actually recommend sticking with newer varieties. And the reason being is mm-hmm. that newer varieties are newer breeding. And newer breeding usually breeds in disease resistance, less thorns, mm-hmm. easier care, so that they're easier to take care of. So I always say when you're a newer grower, look at when the rose was released, and the newer it is, usually the easier it's going to be to care mm-hmm. for. So that would be one tip. And then I say for newer growers, if you're looking to grow cut flowers, that's a little bit different than just growing roses. So for a newer grower, finding something that's a shrub mm. that's maybe not as ideal for cut flowers, but they're a little bit more easy care. Like here in America, I don't know if it's called iceberg. Is it called iceberg in England? But iceberg is like a quarter.
Oh yeah, I think we have iceberg. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a German quartus red rose. It's a great prolific rose. Like that's a really easy care one that's been around for a long time. But any kind of like shrub rose is a great like starter rose for someone. If you're looking for some starter roses mm-hmm. that are good for cut flowers, again, newer ones, but I really like here in the States, Princess Charlene de Monaco. It's a Mayonde mm-hmm. rose. And you guys actually have more of the Mayonde ones, I think, released in England than we have available here. But Mayonde's a wonderful breeder. But Princess Charlene de Monaco, I like Moonlight Romantica is another one. It's a nice yellow.
I wish they would give us Princess Charlene.
I didn't quite catch that.
Oh, we don't have Princess Charlene here. They've been mean to us. It's one of the few that we don't have of the Mayonde ones. She's the one that I always look at and I'm like, damn.
Oh, but you probably have you probably have other ones I wish we had here.
Yeah, evens out, I'm sure.
So I guess that's a trade-off.
And they've mm-hmm. got different names as well. I always say to people it's worth having a bit of a stalk on the internet to see if they're called something different, because one that I really like that's called Francis Mayonde in America is called Prince Jardinier here.
Yeah.
Weirdly, so I managed to get it under a different name, which I was really excited about because I didn't think that you could find it here. But yeah, so it's worth looking at the European versus the American names for things.
And so beginner rose growers, so they should go for a newer variety that's hopefully obviously a bit less disease prone. What would be your other tips? Are there some absolute basics for someone like me who's never grown a rose before?
You know, I would say I always recommend to people, even for new growers, and that I think they sometimes seem intimidated by this, but get a soil test. If you're growing in a pot, you don't need a soil mm-hmm. test. But if you're growing in the ground, it's good to get a test of your soil to see what you might need to add or amend with. Or conversely, you may not need to add or amend with anything because you might have really great soil. And sometimes new growers think mm-hmm. they need to throw everything but the kitchen sink like on their soil, and it sometimes actually will harm their roses because, like I said, they already have great soil and they might put too much fertilizer or too much nitrogen or too much compost. Or so always starting with a soil test I think is a good thing. And there's really great, I know here in the States there are, I'm not as familiar with as many, you know, that might be over in your neck of the woods, but there's really easy companies now that, you know, they send you a little, you know, bag in the mail. You'd scoop out your soil with directions, you mail it back in, and then they just email you a soil test. So it's pretty quick and painless. Like, it's really not hard even for a brand new grower to do. But I would say that would be my tip, is make sure you know what your soil is. That will help you with anything you're growing, not just roses. And then my other tip would be, especially if you want to grow cut flowers, which most people come to me for cut flower, how to grow garden roses as cut flowers, is to make sure you go and deadhead regularly. And that's cutting off the spent blooms. Eventually the blooms will either fall off or they will form rose hips. But if you go through and deadhead regularly, that's what signals to the plant to grow blooms again. And then that's how you will keep your production up, or you'll be able to have blooms that you're going to cut off of all year round. If you don't do that deadheading, you won't have an abundance of blooms. So I would say for new growers, that would be like kind of my other tip, especially if you're trying to grow them as cut flowers, make sure that you're deadheading regularly.
And when you deadhead, do you deadhead down to like a certain point? Is there like a, is there a pruney type thing in there, or do you just chop the heads off?
It just depends on what you're doing. So like if, you know, it's a brand new plant, you might just chop the head off. If it's a more established rose, usually just go down to the first or second set of five leaves. So that your first fifth, your like fifth leaf set, you would just cut about a quarter inch right above that fifth leaf set. But if your plant is like, especially hybrid teas can get sometimes very, very tall later in the season. They can grow kind of wild depending on your weather here in our warmer weather. I know you in England don't have as warm a weather as we have here, but we can get, you know, hybrid teas that can get 6-7 feet tall. If you were going through and deadheading and it was super tall and you wanted to take some of the, and you wanted to take some of the height down, you could deadhead a little lower, meaning you could take like almost like a stem off. But really deadheading is just removing the blooms. And as long as you cut above a, like a fifth leaf set, you can really cut anywhere on the plant to remove that bloom.
And that's going to keep them re-blooming for as long as possible.
Yes. The more frequently you deadhead, the more blooms will then continue to regenerate. If you don't have time to deadhead, it's not really a big deal. The plant will still continue to grow. You just, it will take it longer to naturally re-bloom. You're kind of helping it along.
And when you're growing for cut flowers, do you recommend fertilizing quite a lot more regularly? Because like the roses that I have in the garden, I tend to fertilize like at the start of the season and then maybe like once into the season to encourage that repeat bloom. But I've seen some, you know, more commercial growers fertilizing like almost on a weekly basis. Is that something you'd recommend?
You know, it really, I kind of go back to that. That's why I always tell everybody to get a soil test. I go back to that soil testing that it really kind of depends on your individual location. Like if you really do need to fertilize a lot, and I use that soil testing. And then I also do testing on my leaf samples. So I do foliage testing too, to see like what nutrients are actually getting from the ground into the plant. And I don't necessarily recommend this for home growers because you don't need to go to all that trouble. But for me as a professional grower, that's what drives my fertilizing, is I look at the soil tests and I look at the leaf tests. And sometimes I do a little more, sometimes I do a little less. It depends on if we had a very rainy year and we have a lot of leaching, or, you know, more leaching, like that, you know, any nutrients I might apply are going to go into the soil a little bit more quickly if we've got a lot of rain in the winter versus like this year we've had a drought year. So I use those tests to guide my fertilizing. But a good rule of thumb in general, like if you know that you've got a great basic soil profile, is I fertilize roughly every 6 to 8 weeks with a granular. And that's great for a regular garden, you know, just growing in your garden. I don't do any more than that. I don't usually recommend weekly fertilizing unless you're doing maybe a foliar spray and you're doing something that's got a really low amount of like nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. A lot of people like to do like a like fish emulsion or things that are similar to that, and they will do a foliar spray weekly or like every 2 weeks. And that just kind of gives it a little bit of a boost. But if you have a great granular, especially one that's a slow release, and you, like I said, you put it on every 6 to 8 weeks, you really shouldn't need much more than that for your roses. Again, unless your soil test says otherwise, like unless you have really nutrient deficient soil. But like phosphorus, for example, is a very stable element, and that's usually held very well in the soil, and you don't usually need to apply a lot of it.
I love how technical you are. I feel like I'm really talking to a proper flower farmer here, somebody who actually knows the ground, which is not that our other guests don't know lots about what they're doing, but this is so, like, I love the science of it.
Well, and I you know, I always tell people growing in your garden is a lot different than, you know, what I do. I don't do the same things I do out in my commercial field as I do in my yard. So I'm not as technical in my yard. I don't go out and get leaf sample tests of, you know, because it's not my livelihood. I don't have to make those perfect blooms, or I'm not selling that plant to somebody else. You know, I want to make sure I have the healthiest bare root plant that I can send off to someone. That's a little different than, like, just enjoying it in my yard. That's why I tell people, like, 6 to 8 weeks, or, like, here in the States, you guys kind of have somewhat similar holidays. I tell people to fertilize around, like, the major U.S. holidays, like Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day. Mm-hmm. Like, if you just remember to, you know, fertilize, like, those four times a year, you'll be fine. And just don't worry, you don't need to be out there weekly, you know, if you don't have time. Like, it should be, I'm always a fan of, especially if it's a garden, it should be enjoyable, you know, like, it should fit your lifestyle. So, like, if you don't have time to fertilize every week, don't fertilize every week. If you don't want to go out there and spray, like, a foliar spray, like, you know, it's got to fit your lifestyle too. Not just your goals, but, like, it's got to be convenient for you as well.
I've been fertilizing with the David Austin fertilizer, which I think has got chicken manure in it or something like that. And I'm absolutely terrified that my little plot is going to get attacked by foxes after the chicken manure. So I think I'm going to have to change to a granular feed like that. Do you suffer with any kind of weird pests like that where you are, or is it just the standard aphids and other bug-like things?
Oh no, that does not sound fun at all. No, luckily I do have coyotes here, but they actually are not harmful to my roses. They actually help keep the deer population in check here, or the deer would actually be eating my roses, but they're a natural predator. So around here, or really kind of anywhere in Northern California, deers can be an issue. A lot of people have issues with deer, and they have to fence in their rose gardens with these really tall, high fences because the deer will eat them. But I have coyotes. I do not have a fox issue. We have lots of skunks, and then, you know, gophers and all of those kinds of things. Wow. But they don't really damage the roses per se, or they don't go after any, like, fertilizer issues. Or I don't have any issues with the type of fertilizer I put down, attracting any of those type of vertebrate pests. And then I do have, obviously, the insect pests, as you mentioned. Those are always around. Those are always my nemesis.
This is a tangent, and we're not famous for our understanding of American wildlife, but are you telling me coyotes eat deer?
Yes.
Are they that big?
Yeah. I mean, they're like the size of a very large dog.
What? In my head, they were like a small...
No, they would be like the size of like a large, you know, golden retriever, or like a large Labrador. I mean, I see them out in the orchard. I mean, they'll be roaming in the orchard in the early... They tend to come out in the early mornings and late at night. So I'll see them, like, out my kitchen window in the orchard, or out, like, out my back window. I can see our rose field from my house. And, you know, I'll see them roaming in the morning. And they look just like a large dog. Like, I don't know how else to describe them. Wow. You know, like, their size, like, the size to, like, equate to somebody who's never seen one before. But no, they will attack a deer that's a lot much larger than they are. Similarly to, like, a cheetah might attack a zebra. Like, you know, zebras are usually much bigger, but they're a predator. Yeah. So yeah, they will attack it, run. Like, I mean, I will find, if I drive out on my ATV to the back of my prune orchard, you know, the back 30 acres, and I will just find, like, deer carcasses that have been...
Oh, wow.
Kind of brutal, but yeah, we do have that.
Who knew?
That level of wildlife here.
And I suppose you definitely don't want the deer anywhere near the roses, because I've seen the damage they can do. They can just razor a field, can't they?
So I'm happy with my coyotes, because they again, it's a natural predator, and they keep them in check, and I don't have to fence my roses. They do howl at night, though. I mean, they are loud and noisy, and you hear them howling at night, which can be sometimes actually wake my kids up, and my son will come in and go, "Mama, the coyotes." I'm like, "Yeah, but they're just having fun." I was like, just pretend it's like, because it kind of sound like the like in the Lion King movie. I'm like, it's just like the Lion King, kids. It'll be fine. But was like, it's fine. But yeah, I actually like the natural predators. I mean, I try to let, you know, nature take over as much as it can with the least amount of intervention as I can. So like, that's one thing that I'm happy that I have, that I don't have to contend with the deer.
Thank goodness for that. So we've talked a little bit about new growers and tips for new growers. What about somebody like me who has a little bit of a rose addiction, but obviously I'm not a, you know, full-scale flower farmer. Have you got any tips for, like, how to up my rose game? Like, what can I do to get more roses or healthier plants, or just, you know, take it to the next level?
You know, for somebody who's kind of more established, it sounds like you are, you kind of have your, like, you know, the colors you like, you know, the varieties you tend to do. Are you looking to cut more of your roses, like for cut flowers, or are you just looking for just definitely general care? You know, I would say most people don't harvest enough or deadhead, like I was saying earlier. Like, they just don't go in there, you know, kind of depending on their schedules, and they want the blooms to come, but like, they don't really do that step of deadheading or frequently harvesting that will help them have repeat blooms all year long. So I would say probably harvest more. The other thing I think people don't do because they're either scared of it or they're a little timid is winter pruning. People usually under prune their roses in the winter. And that's kind of, I always equate it, or the analogy I always use is it's kind of like a good spa treatment for your roses. That, like, you know, imagine that you're getting a nice facial, and you go in and you're sloughing off all the dead skin, and you've got the moisturizer, and you do all that, and you come out and you feel like a totally new woman. Dormant pruning is like a version of that for your rose, that when you get in there and you cut out any of the dead wood, the diseased wood, some of the older canes that are just not producing as well, and you kind of slough all of that off, that encourages that new growth, that new healthy plump growth to grow in the next season. And that regeneration is what's going to keep your plant healthy season after season after season. So I would say for maybe kind of intermediate growers, you probably aren't pruning enough, or maybe aren't getting in there and pruning as well as you should in the winter season. So I would say that would probably be my tip. Make sure you really have got like your pruning program down, because that's the best thing you can do to get your rose off to a good start for the growing season.
I think some people are a bit scared, aren't they? Because like with some other types of flowers, you know, too hard a cutback can not be good for them. But I think like with roses, they're tougher than they look, aren't they? I mean, the flowers can look quite delicate, but the plant itself is pretty, you know, pretty hardcore, isn't it? You can cut that back quite far. I mean, I try and cut mine back to about 40 centimeters in terms of the height in my winter pruning. Would you say that was not enough or too much?
No, I would say that that's actually probably good. And then it's also just the amount of canes. Like, how many canes are you leaving?
I try and leave about 5 or 6.
Yep, that's perfect. See, you're doing it great already. You're like, you get an A+.
And I cut any that are crossing over. I've been swatting up. I watch your Friday Instagram every week. I'm taking the tips.
Oh, good. So you get a gold star. Like, yay, good job.
I feel like we need a round of applause for Nicole in the corner.
I know.
I'm always at work when you do it live, so I'm always on the catch up. But I'm like, it's Saturday morning. I have to catch up with Felicia's live.
I don't do it live. Just like as you guys have seen today with my internet out here, how bad it is, I actually record it and then I upload it.
So I'm picking it up on IGTV anyway, like everybody else. Okay, that's all right then. I'm not missing out on any liveness.
You are not, and it's a disaster. So I have people send me questions on Instagram. I have them type them in a little question box, and then I take the questions and I answer them. I tried to do it live, and it's just I don't have the bandwidth out here with my horrible internet and my rural area. So I record it. So you're not missing out. You're watching it played back.
Okay,
like
okay,
else.
Good.
I'm so excited that the tips were helpful. I'm trying to think of something else that, like, for an intermediate grower, because it sounds like you're already doing your pruning really well, which I would say is a good thing. The other thing I would say maybe for an intermediate grower is to probably, I would say, not fertilize more, but just get your soil test and then really dial that in to your soil. Like, I can't really, that's what's hard to give advice, because people are like, well, how much should I fertilize? And that's really going to vary based on your, you know, your soil and where you are. But I would say dial in your fertilizer and then also your watering. I mean, you're in a climate where you get a lot more rain, correct? Like where you are?
Yeah, it does depend on where we are in the country, because I'm sort of middle of England, and we've had quite a dry winter, but then we can get, you know, kind of like a deluge of rain, you know, these real pockets of rain. So in the summer though, we're moving, you know, with climate change, moving more to a drier summer, unfortunately. So, you know, I'm out there with the hose pipe at least every other night, trying to, for my potted ones especially, giving them some water. But I'm never sure how much to water the ones that are on the plot.
Yeah, you know, that's where I use I don't know that I always recommend this for home growers, but if you really want to kind of dial in your watering and know, like, hey, am I watering enough, you can get a device called a soil tensiometer, and it measures the level of available moisture to the plant. And every plant has essentially an ideal soil moisture level that it grows best in. So everything from like broccoli to roses to prunes, like all has this a window that is best for them. Kind of like people, you know, have like the ideal calories they should intake or, you know, whatever. And it's different for men than women. Plants are all the same. They kind of have a different amount of water that they like to have. And you can get this device called a soil tensiometer, and you can install it in the root zone of your roses, roughly about 12 to 12. I'm not going to know it in centimeters, but like 12 inches to about 2 feet deep. So what is that? Like around like 30 to like 50 centimeters ish, 60 centimeters ish. You can install it, like, cause that's where the root zone would be. And, you can read that, and then it'll tell you if you have too much water or not enough water, based on, it's actually measured in a unit called kilopascals, which is a pressure unit. It measures the essentially the pressure of the tension of the water molecules and how tightly they're held to the soil. That's what actually I use on my farm. I use kind of an advanced version of that. I actually have like a professional one that's all installed, and I have 3 monitor probes, and it's hooked up to an app via solar on my phone. Like it's a whole thing.
You're next level though.
Yeah, very high-tech farming. But the average gardener can get like just a hand one that's just basically like a glass tube. It almost kind of looks like a thermometer with like a pressure gauge on the top. And you can just install it like in your roses, like in a basic area in your, you know, your plot or your allotment. You can just put it in and you can see how much moisture it has. And then you just try to keep it at a consistent level that's ideal for roses. Because otherwise, you don't really know. I mean, that would be the best way to do it, is to get the device, because then you know exactly how much, and you can do it by measuring units. You could also kind of do it with your hand, and you can do sort of like, I call it like a hand soil tension test. You could dig down, same kind of idea. You would dig down about 12 to 24 inches or whatever, roughly 60 centimeters. You could dig down with a spade, dig down and get as far down as you can. They're roughly about 60 inches. Get your hand in. And then you're going to like squeeze the soil and try and squeeze it into a ball. And if it crumbles, you need more water. If it rings out like a sponge and it's dripping, or it's like too sticky, or it feels kind of like putty, or like, you know, my kids these days have that like slime stuff. I don't know if you've, you know, that like kid slime, that can, you know, that's toy that kids play with. It's like a slime. If it feels like gross that, stuff. It's got, it's got gross. It's got, your soil's got too much water. Or if it's dripping, it's got too much water. But if you squeeze it and it holds together just kind of in like just a nice little ball, almost like you were making like a meatball, and it holds together well, then you've got like the perfect level of soil or level of water. And that will vary a little bit by soil type. Like sandy soils feel a little differently than more clay soils. But in general, that's kind of a basic way to measure the soil or the water in your soil to see if it needs more.
Yeah, I think if you, for those people trying to take it up a level, that is an excellent.
You asked like how to take it up a level.
No, I'm all for this. I'm all for the science.
But again, for most people, like that's not, you know, like just go out there with your hose and, you know, water. But if you're really looking to like,
if it's hot, they're probably thirsty, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Like if you're warm, they're probably probably thirsty. That is correct. They probably are.
And like, I don't water anything in the winter here.
Lucky you.
I mean, we've got rain, right? So
it does rain.
We do not. We have had, we usually do, we should, but we've been in a drought here in California for the last 3 years, and we have, oh, wow, we haven't had any rain all year this year since January. Like, and so I shouldn't have to be watering, but I am. Like, I'm having to run my irrigation because we haven't had rain since since December. Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, like I said, I watch your little Friday sessions on Instagram, and I'm always so jealous because most of the time it looks quite sunny and you've always got your sun hat on, and I'm like, that is where I want to farm.
Yes, it's always sunnier.
You've not got to have an umbrella, you've got a hat instead.
No, and I'm always just hoping there's rain in the summer. I mean, in the middle of the season, I don't want rain because it'll ruin the blooms and I'll get fungus and it'll be a mess. But like in the wintertime when they're dormant, it's supposed to rain. And I welcome the rain, but we haven't had any, and it's been, it's been kind of a bummer. Farmers around here, it doesn't really affect me too much because I have a well, and I use my well to irrigate my roses, but a lot of the farmers around here that grow other crops, they get their water from our tributaries and our dams and things like that. Mm. And they're not full enough this year from rainwater, so they're not getting their allocation of water to irrigate their crops. So they're having to fallow land this year and not produce wheat and rice and a lot of those types of crop because we don't have enough water here in California, which is really a bummer.
And there are people who don't believe in climate change.
I know, right?
Weird.
They should talk to the farmers.
I know. I've tracked it for years. Like, you know, we're a good solid, almost 10 degrees warmer now than we were even 20 years ago. Like, consistently in the winter now. Yeah. So it's a lot warmer. I used to be able to grow tulips a lot more successfully because they need that colder, those chill hours. You know, they need the cold in the winter. And like now I have to, if I want to grow tulips, I have to do it almost completely artificially in that, like, I have to put them in a, you know, cold storage and root them there for, you know, a couple months prior to bringing them outside because we don't have the cold temperatures in the winter anymore that we used to have. So,
yeah, exactly. And last year we didn't have a lot of rain over winter, actually, where I am anyway. And I didn't realize that tulips are that dependent on water to grow. And I ended up with quite a lot of, especially the ones I grew in pots outside in my yard, and they were quite stubby little short things. And then when I posted on Instagram, everyone was like, they didn't get enough water. They need water to be nice and tall. So I learned that the hard way.
Yes, they were right. You do need water, lots of water, or not, a consistent amount of water, especially in the last like 4 to 5 weeks of the growth cycle. They need all that water. Yep.
So we're going to, we have what we call our super secret side episode that we'll be recording with you shortly as well, but where we're going to talk about some of your favorite roses. But to entice the listeners over there, do you want to give us a little sneak, maybe, or I don't know if we could pin you down to a one favorite rose. Would that be too mean?
Oh my, no, I can try.
You must have one that you just adore.
I always say it. I know. I really love Charlotte. It is a David Austin rose. So it is there. It's an English rose. And it's, woo, my mom's name was Charlotte. And I think I don't love it because of the name, but it's just a happy coincidence. And it's yellow. Mm-hmm. As I said before, I love yellow roses. It's a buttery yellow. It's kind of got a shade of yellow that I've never seen in any other yellow. And believe me, I'm a yellow rose connoisseur. So I've looked at all of them. I know all the shades and colors and tones, but it's got this very beautiful kind of light buttery color. And the bloom shape is a nice cup shape. It almost looks like a peony. And the fragrance is just, it is very fragrant. It's fragrant, but almost in a, I hate to say subtle, because it's a very fragrant rose, but it's not overpowering. The fragrance is just, it's probably my favorite one. And it's got a nice compact, I would say, or not compact, average shape. Like, it's not too tall. What is it? Goldilocks. It's not too tall. It's not too short. It's like perfect. It's like a great all around rose. I really love it.
Oh, you're selling that one to me.
And it isn't one of their newer ones. It is one of their, it is one of, I really love it. You know, some people think it's either too short. You know, I've recommended it to other people and they're like, oh, I don't, you know, it's too small for me. Like they want something bigger and more grand or, but again, I find it, I think it's just such a great all around rose. So, that's my pick. That would be, if I had to pick one, I would pick that one.
Okay, I know we said only pick one, but Nicole got to ask you her specific question, and so I want to ask you my specific question that is not for everyone, it is for me. And I'm moving to a smaller garden. So I have one rose, but admittedly I think I killed it. So rose number one, I think it might be dead. So we'll put him aside. But I want to get something that will be good in a garden, but also could cut if I wanted to. I'm sort of thinking like in the pinky vibe. What do you think I should go for?
In the pinky vibe. And you said you already had Boscobel. Do you have Princess Anne?
Well, Boscobel died.
That's the one she thinks you
Which.
may have killed.
Boscobel's dead. We
Oh,
he
okay. You
didn't
think you.
survive the winter, unfortunately.
Did you kill. Have you tried Princess Anne?
No.
We spoke about Princess Anne, didn't
Did
we? I
we?
said that could be a good one for
Okay.
you.
I'm gonna write this down. Yep, Princess
I
Anne.
think
Okay.
Princess, I mean, are you looking for that same color, that same kind of darker, deeper, like magenta color pink?
I'm easy. I want something that's quite flowery, sort of maybe low maintenance, because I've got no idea what I'm doing, but could cut it if I really, really wanted
Okay, but could cut it if you really, really wanted to. But you're not committed to a specific.
No, and I'm not like Nicole. I'll do anything. Okay.
I think Princess Anne is a beautiful one. I think Princess Anne is a lovely one, and it is also great for cutting, and it is that same color. So if you liked Boscobel, I think you would like that one. I think that one would be a good David Austin for you, and it will grow well in a pot, because you said
Ooh.
possibly in a pot as well, correct? Like it you could go either
Absolutely.
way. Some of my other, I would say, favorite Austins that are a little more easy care, a lot of them actually are climbers. So if you were gonna put them in a pot, you'd really have to
Oh, she's
prune them
looking for a climber.
down.
She's looking for a
How
climber
did you
too.
know? This is
Okay.
so exciting.
Because I would say you'd have to keep them. If you want to grow them as a shrub, you can. It just takes a little more. It's not more maintenance. You just have to be really aggressive about your pruning and your in-season maintenance to keep it like the size and shape you want. Or you can actually grow it as a climber as well, and you would just train it up whatever you want. But for climbers, I like Woolerton Old Hall, which is a really great cut, and Crown Princess Margarita is also beautiful. That's a beautiful peach as well.
Princess.
I
Yep.
think those are both good. You could grow them as
She's writing this down.
a Crown Princess Margarita, and then another one that might be good for a pot for you. Again, I'm going back to my yellows, but also just because they're such good roses, is Golden Celebration. Is a great cut flower. It's going to be a little easier maintenance for you. It's a shrub. It is also another David Austin. It will do well in a pot. It actually grows well. I actually have four or five of them in my like little family garden where my kids play. It's beautiful. Golden Celebration does well in the ground or in a pot. So you could do it either way. And I think
Thank you
it will
for
be
that.
a
I
little
enjoyed that.
easier care for you than Boscobel.
Yes, Boscobel died. Yeah, he didn't make it.
Yeah. Didn't make it. That's okay.
So we've spoken about the new growers and the kind of intermediate growers. I'm gonna take this as a point to swerve into your book that you are just releasing, like now, right? You're packaging up books at the moment.
Yes, so we are packaging up books. It actually doesn't officially publish, or its publication date is March 22nd, but I worked out a deal with my publisher who was really great. The book was actually supposed to be published at the end of last year before Christmas, and because of paper shortages and other issues, kind of due to the ongoing supply chain problems during COVID, it didn't get done in December. So we kind of made a deal that they were going to let me release it a little bit earlier, so that I could start having it available for my customers who, wanted to actually purchase it for like Christmas. So I'm actually shipping books out now. I have them in hand. I'm shipping anybody that ordered direct through me, and then it's also available everywhere else on pre-order purchase currently, like Amazon. I believe it's actually in Amazon UK now. I heard someone say it was on Amazon Canada. So people will have to check where it is. I don't have much to do with any of that. That's all the distributor and the publisher. Like, they control where it goes. And that's a little above my pay grade, how everybody can get it everywhere. but it will start shipping. My understanding is books purchased that weren't direct through me will start shipping March 22nd, when it actually is the official publication date. I kind of got a sneak preview, or a kind of a special first time, you know, way to distribute because of kind of the COVID delays. So I'm really excited. It is very shipping exciting. Out thousands of books this week. So I'm very excited to finally send it off into the world. So,
and I love the name of it, Growing Wonder. That is just, I feel like that with a rose. It is, you know, these flowers come from these little sticks, and they are just growing wonder, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
And that's why I mentioned the kind of, we spoke about the new growers and the intermediate growers. Your book kind of talks to three distinct groups, doesn't it, about how to grow?
Yes. So sprinkled throughout the book, because I wanted this, when the publisher kind of approached me with the they said, hey, do you want to write a book about roses? I was like, I don't know if I have time. And then I finally committed to it. And I, you know, one of the things that when we were in the early talks of outlining it was, you know, who's this book going to be for? And so I kind of had to decide, like, is this going to be for the beginning grower? And as you know, we've all been talking here today, Nicole and Sarah, you guys both are kind of different levels of growers, and you have different questions. So the challenge became, how do we make a book that's approachable for people with different kinds of questions? And so what we ended up doing was, throughout the book, every chapter has tips, depending on what the chapter topic is about, for what we call our three different like rose growing types, or types of rose grower, which are the everyday gardener, the aspiring rosarian, and the weekend warrior. So it's for people that have like 2 hours a week, you know, 5 hours a week, or are like full on, you know, I want to be a flower farmer, or I want to go all in aspiring rosarian, which is, you know, 10 or more hours a week that you can devote to your roses. So we have tips sprinkled throughout that kind of tell you what to do, depending on where you fall into those categories. So hopefully it will help people with the, like, kind of like you were just asking about, like, watering. Like, for the people that want to go diving in, like, they're going to know exactly how to do what I was just describing to you about watering. Like, we go in depth. People that are like, I just want to know when to water my pot, we tell them how to do that too. So it's kind of, you can choose the level of care that you want to put in, and those types of things are sprinkled throughout the chapters.
So something for everyone, basically, who wants to get roses.
Yeah.
And like you say, the book's on sale at the moment for pre-order, dispatching very soon. But if people want more immediate tips, where can they find you?
You can find me, as you said, on social media. I try to be as active as I can, but like I squeeze it in between actually running the farm. So some weeks it's more difficult for me to pop on than others, but I do try to always do a Farm Tour Friday, as you were mentioning. I ask people can submit questions to me on social media. And then on Friday, I walk around the farm and I kind of show you a little bit what's happening and I answer questions. So that's a great way. I also have an online learning academy that's called the Menagerie Academy, and people can join the academy. It's a subscription-based learning community. So we have three levels of subscription that are three different price tiers. And I do education that way too, weekly. So I actually do a weekly Q&A for members of my academy that's recorded, and it's in a private, or a, you know, a whatever they call it, like a password protected, like a gated sort of learning community. I also have step-by-step videos, ebooks, and like guides to different types of growing questions all about roses, all in the Learning Academy too. So that's a great way to find me as well, if people are interested in learning more about growing roses. But the book is a great resource too. I'm glad you brought that up, because it's just kind of like everything that people always ask me is all in there. It's all in the book.
I cannot wait to have it on my shelf. It's going to have pride of place next to the other beautiful books.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for chatting to us today. We've absolutely loved it. And I think it's I always hope that when we do these, like, we convince people to try something new. And if people aren't already growing roses, I really hope this has convinced them. And, you know, if they want to know more about some great varieties, we're about to do the super secret side episode for our patrons, which we're going to get some more of your favourites on record. But yeah, thank you so much for your time, Felicia. We've absolutely loved chatting to you.
I had such a great time today, and it was so nice chatting with you as well. I can't wait to give you some more tips for your patrons with my favorite roses.
Woohoo.
Thank you.
It's outro time.
Thank you so much for listening and for your support. We are loving this season so far.
And we hope you are too. If you loved the episode as much as we love doing it, then we would be so grateful if you left us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts.
You can also subscribe. And you can find us on Instagram for more of our adventures at Let's Grow Girls Podcast.
We're really grateful having you here listening to all of our interviews with our amazing guests. And we hope that you carry on enjoying the rest of the season.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye. You sounded really far away when you said that. You sat back.
Yeah, because I didn't want to shout at our people, you know.